Third, the truth of the cessation of suffering. If someone were to ask, why be a Buddhist? What is the purpose of Buddhism? How would you answer? If you ask me, my answer may frighten you, because I'm a Buddhist for the sake of seeking cessation. The word cessation may make people think of annihilation, extermination, or nothingness, and make people fearful. In the history of Buddhism, there have been many cases in which the meaning of the Buddhist teaching was misinterpreted due to incorrect translations, and these mistakes became obstacles to the propagation of Buddhism. Ordinary people may hear the word cessation and think of annihilation or extermination, but the real meaning of the third noble truth is to rid oneself of the affliction of delusion and discrimination so that one's true nature is revealed just as it is. Thus, cessation in this case is not pessimistic nor destructive, but positive, creative, and constructive. Cessation is the ideal state in which greed, anger, and ignorance have been completely eradicated. The quiet, peaceful state of nirvana will appear only when the fire of sensual desire is extinguished. The Buddhist teachings on wisdom and emptiness also point to the same goal. We should empty out our delusion, greed, and craving so that we can uncover our wisdom. When the concept of emptiness is brought up, there are some who object and say, I suppose then that heaven and earth are empty, and that the self and others do not exist. This emptiness pulls people into an aimless world of nothingness. It sounds horrible. Actually, the doctrine of emptiness in Buddhism does not mean non-existence or nihilism. The infinite expanse of existence is contained within emptiness. There would be no existence without emptiness. Our typical conception of existence is inaccurate, but the Buddhist idea of emptiness allows for true existence and all the wonders of reality. How does emptiness become non-empty and cessation become unceasing? If I wished to organize a lecture, the first question to consider would be, where should we hold the lecture? If there is no space, it's not possible for us to organize the lecture. Usually, when we want to organize something, we have to consider five factors: people, subject, time, place, and object. Place means space. Space has a very intimate relationship with our lives. For example, your pocket can hold things if it has space. You can put money in your purse if it is empty. It is because your nose, ears, mouth, stomach, intestines, and pores are empty that you can breathe, absorb nutrients, metabolize, and maintain your life. If all these spaces were not empty, people would not be able to survive. Because there is emptiness, there is existence. If there were no empty space, we could not construct buildings. This is how emptiness gives rise to existence. Thus, cessation and emptiness do not mean nothingness. The cessation of illusion and the elimination of the unreal are the prerequisites for the manifestation of true, wondrous existence. Xunzi, the great Confucian scholar, suggested that one needs to go through three stages to cultivate the mind: emptiness, unification, and stillness. The first stage, emptiness, means that one should create an appropriate space within one's mind and not be stubborn or condescending. If one has space within, new knowledge can be easily absorbed and others' suggestions are readily accepted. Progress will surely follow. It says in one of the sutras, if one wishes to know about the Buddha state of mind, one should expand one's mind like empty space. We have all seen space, but who can clearly describe its form and shape? Is space rectangular in shape, square, or circular? Space is everywhere. The space that fills a cup will take on a cup-like shape, while the space inside a box is rectangular in shape. Since space does not have any definite, fixed form, it can take on any form. The teaching on emptiness transcends both existence and non-existence. If we can expand our mind to be like the infinity of space, we will understand the Buddha state of mind. To become a Buddha, we must realize the true nature of wisdom and emptiness, and understand the truth of nirvana and cessation. Cessation means the extinction of birth and death, and the severing of the cycle of rebirth. The cycle of rebirth is the reason for our suffering, which we must endure through long periods of anguish. Therefore, only by eradicating the cycle of rebirth, which we are caught in because of our desires, will we attain the ultimate freedom of no birth and no death. Hence, if we wish to be free from the pain of suffering, we must solve the problem at its root, that is, to extinguish all of our mundane desires. When you hear that Buddhism advocates that people should eliminate all mundane desires, you may fear that if you become a Buddhist, you are no longer free to marry, have children, make money, have a high position, or enjoy worldly pleasures. However, there is no need to worry. Buddhism is a religion that seeks peace and joy. It does not renounce normal living. What it rejects is overindulgence. In fact, as a Buddhist, one can still marry, do business, and live a normal life. There is a Buddhist sutra, the Vimalakirti Sutra, that describes a layman named Vimalakirti who was married and very well-to-do, yet he was not a slave to material desire. In the sutra, he is described thus: though a layman, he is not attached to the three realms. Though married, he always cultivates purity. There are those who say that Buddhism rejects affection. In reality, Buddhism strongly emphasizes affection. What Buddhism seeks to eliminate is selfish affection and desire. One should transform selfish affection into compassion and selfish desire into wisdom. The affection advocated by Buddhism is devotion, not possession. It promotes the compassion of giving, not wanting. The love advocated by Buddhism is love for all sentient beings, not just one specific being. The Bodhisattva's compassionate act of aiding all sentient beings is the manifestation of the selfless affection in its highest form. Affection that embodies compassion and wisdom will not go awry. Some people seek out romantic love all their lives. Although love may bring about happiness, it can also be a source of suffering. When we read the newspaper, we see that murders occur every day. When we examine the underlying causes of these crimes, we see that relationships and money are usually the main causes. Love without wisdom and compassion is a very dangerous trap. There are some who believe that joy in life is nothing but the possession of love and money. Buddhism advocates that people should eliminate selfish affection and greed for money. In that case, what kind of happiness can one attain from Buddhism? Actually, Buddhism does not get rid of money itself, nor does it say that money is a poisonous snake. Being poor is not a sin, nor is being rich loathsome. In fact, according to the Mahayana Bodhisattva path, as long as wealth does not make one greedy, and as long as position can benefit the propagation of Buddhism, wealth or a high position can be beneficial. Wealth and position can be very useful in promoting Buddhism. Wealth in itself is neither good nor bad. The key lies in the way it was created and is used. Some people have the misconception that Buddhism says that we must renounce all possessions. This is simply not true. Actually, Buddhism says that it is important to have things. It is just that the things we should have are different from what people generally think. According to Buddhism, what we should have is joy, not just for ourselves, but for all sentient beings. The way to accomplish this goal is to develop the mind of non-attachment, that is, to have everything by not possessing anything. I often say that we should consider not having as having, just as we should see emptiness as existence. As I mentioned earlier, without emptiness, there is no existence, and in the same way, we can only have things by not having. When we possess things that are by nature limited, measurable, and calculable, whereas not having is limitless, immeasurable, and boundless. Within life, there are two worlds. The one before our eyes is a narrow world of possessing. Because of their ignorance, sentient beings fight for their possessions. They do not know that when they turn around, they will find there is another larger and wider world behind them. This other world is the world of not having, and will be realized only if one's selfish desires and emotions are eradicated. In this world of not having, birth and death are eradicated, desires are extinguished, and all duality, differences, and illusions no longer exist. It is a completely liberated and carefree state of being. This is the state that all Buddhists should strive to attain. When can the state of liberation be attained? Does one have to wait until one's physical body is dead and life is no more? No. This very state was attained by the Buddha as he sat beneath the Bodhi tree on the night of his enlightenment. If we work diligently, we can attain this state just as the Buddha did. What is the state of an enlightened being? In the eyes of most people, an enlightened person often behaves very strangely. For example, in the records of Chan Buddhism, the enlightened Chan masters had different ways of expressing themselves when they became enlightened. Some disciples laughed madly, and others struck their masters. The masters did not mind such behavior. They actually approved of it. This kind of behavior was completely unacceptable to ordinary people. However, to an enlightened being, expressions such as these denote the nature of Chan.